So when I was young, when I was growing up, I had this recurring dream that often would plague me, and the dream was that my house was burning down. And I remember very vividly the details of this dream. I remember the wind blowing, the trees, and the laundry on the line as I was watching in my dream my house burning down. And I remember the first responders coming, and I remember the people that would gather to help my family, and then I would always wake up. And I had this dream over and over again. And I think a dream expert might tell you something like this, that what my dream was about was it was based on my security. So the things that I was most secure with and the things that I had in life that made me feel the most comfortable were wrapped up in that house, my family and the things that I had as a young boy. For some of you, as you parent your young kids, there's that stage when they kind of get into the nightmares or the night terrors. For others of you as adults, maybe there's a recurring dream of failing a test or worrying that people might actually find out who you really are, or maybe standing up in front of a crowd wearing less than desirable clothing, right? That's a recurring dream. But for yet others of us, there is a possible experience that you've actually lived through. Something that was terrifying, something that was humiliating. And so I think for all of us, we have this desire for security. We have a desire for protection. And I want to take us all the way back to the story of Jesus in the wilderness, as we've talked about. And I want us to hear about what it was that Jesus went through when he was being tempted in the wilderness. Now, we're in Matthew chapter 4, and if you have a Bible or you have an app or you have a phone or something, make sure you get that out because we're going to reference that. But this morning, we're going to go back to that story. And Jesus was as soon as he came out from being baptized, he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. And he was there for 40 days. He was fasting. He was being tempted. And also, right after that was when he started his ministry. Everything we know about Jesus, all the stories that we've heard about Jesus, all the great things that he said, all the things that he did happened right after this. So this is a time that he's being prepared. And so I want us to kind of see what happens. But before we dive into Matthew chapter 4, there's three things I'd like to dig into that kind of struck me as I was preparing this message. The first is that when you look at Matthew chapter 4 and you look at the very first verse, it says that the Spirit led Jesus out into the wilderness. Now, when I think about Jesus being led out into the wilderness, there's a common thing now we hear oftentimes, a theme in Christianity about silence and solitude and getting alone with God. And so I think about the Spirit leading Jesus out into the wilderness, and why would he have done that? To allow for him to get alone with God, to get some solitude, to grow closer to God. And certainly all those things are likely true. But what the end of that verse says is this, that the Spirit led Jesus out into the wilderness to be tempted. And I think there's something significant there, because when Jesus was led out into the wilderness to be tempted, he understood that all of us, from every time and every place, would experience what it meant to be tempted. Even all the way back to the very first man and woman in the garden, right? So you have Adam, and he's faced with this temptation. But before he was tempted, he's sitting in the Garden of Eden, right? He had all of the comforts that he could ever desire. Everything was perfect for him. And when he was faced with the temptation to be like God, he took it, and he ate the fruit, because he was promised that he would be like God. And now we have Jesus, whose circumstances are less than ideal. He's in the wilderness. He's fasting, no food, no water. He's weak, and yet he continues to have victory in these temptations. The second thought that I have about these, before we dive into Matthew 4, is this. There's a difference between being tempted and tested. Temptation is something that leads us to destruction, and testing leads us to a place where we're going to be a better version of ourselves. And so in 1 Corinthians 10, we have a verse there. It's 1 Corinthians 10:13, and it says, "There is no temptation that has come to you except what is common to man." So it's a very, what we have to understand is that as humans, we all face very similar temptations. I remember in my formative years in middle school where I felt that the temptations that I was experiencing as a middle school guy, and we all have most of the times a formative time in our spiritual walk and who we are in our middle school years, I remember thinking, I must be the only person going through this. And then I'd start going to camps or going to youth group and realizing, oh, I'm not the only person going through this. In fact, all of the guys that are my age are going through this. And although that's a middle school illustration, the reality is there is no temptation that has come to you except that is common to man. And God is faithful, and he will not allow you to be tempted above what you are able, but will with the temptation provide a way to escape so that you can endure it. And what we have there is an understanding that regardless of the temptation that comes, that we have a God that's fighting for us. He's in our corner. And when we are tempted to do something that leads to our destruction, God is there helping us to endure it. Now, the third thing that struck me as I was studying this was this. Jesus is a very real model for us in how to battle temptation. And so the reason why I say that is because Jesus very easily could have used his supernatural power to overcome these temptations. He could have easily used the fact that he is God in human form, right, to combat these temptations. But he chose to use the very same tools that are available to us to combat temptation. Now, he using supernatural power would have been a great advantage to him, as we're going to see in just a moment. But he chose to do exactly what we have in our toolbox to be able to combat these temptations. So with that in mind, let's take a look at Matthew chapter 4. And we're going to read starting in verse 1, just so that we kind of have a good landing place so that we understand where we are. But where I'm going to preach today is specifically from verses 5 through 7. So let's read Matthew 4 together. I'm going to start in verse 1. "And Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, 'If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread.' And Jesus answered, 'It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God.'" And so verse 5 is where we're going to cover today. And so here we go in this temptation. "And the devil took him to the holy city, to Jerusalem, to the capital, and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. 'If you are the Son of God,' he said, 'throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands, so that you will not strike your foot against a stone.' And Jesus answered him, 'It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test.'" So as we look at these temptations, we only read two, there are three. It's important for us to understand that it's not so much about the specific temptation that Jesus faced. So the specific temptation for Jesus to turn stones to bread, that certainly wouldn't be a temptation that we would experience in our lives. And yet, what we understand, as you're going to hear Brad Coleman, the Highland Park campus pastor, and we heard Jonathan Neef, the Vernon Hills campus pastor, share about these different temptations, that these would rather be more categories of temptation that we all face. And the most vivid place that that's illustrated is in 1 John chapter 2, where John, the friend of Jesus, and John loved Jesus and wrote a lot about Jesus, said this. He said about loving the world. So loving things that are not about Christ, not about God, right? This is what he said about that. He said, "Everything that's in the world," this is 1 John 2:16. He said, "Everything that's in the world," and then he summarizes what's in the world. Everything that's in the world. "The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life." He summarizes everything that's in the world into those three categories, And it can be easily paralleled to the three temptations that Jesus faces in the wilderness. Meaning that for all of us, as we face temptations, we may look at this and go, oh, well, Jesus easily was able to combat temptation because he was Jesus. That's easy for him to be able to do. But the reality is that these categories are the very categories of temptation that we face. So let's look at specifically at verse 5, where we read about our temptation today. So the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. So the devil essentially took him to the only place in Israel where there was a cliff. It's the highest cliff possible for Jesus and he to have stood on the edge of a cliff, and if he took one step out, his step would have been towards destruction. And so for us, it would have been compared to something like the sky deck at the Willis Tower, or for the Chicago purists, the Sears Tower, right? Or Empire State Building, when you get out there on the observation deck, right? It's just this idea that you're standing, and if you take one step, you are plunging to your destruction. And he takes him to the top of the temple, what's been known as the pinnacle of the temple, which could have been as high as 500 to 600 feet high, so a significant height. And he stands there, and then he challenges him in verse 6. He says, if you are the Son of God, that's kind of a dare. If you are the Son of God, then throw yourself down. But this is what's interesting to me. He says, throw yourself down because the Bible's true. So the devil himself is actually preaching a message complete with biblical text. And so he preaches Psalm 91 to Jesus. He says, if the Bible's true, then you're going to be fine if you jump. So you might as well just jump, because you should be proving that the Bible's true. And he quotes this from Psalm 91, that he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. And so Psalm 91 is a song that was written about the protection that God offers to his people in the midst of our fear. And the very first verse of Psalm 91 says this: he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And it goes on to talk about in normal times and in times of war that God will protect us. And then when he turns the corner to verse 11 and 12, the passage where the devil's quoting from, it's very clear that it is about Jesus, that not only God will protect his people, but he will also protect Jesus so that Jesus can accomplish the very things that God sent him to earth to do. So Satan says, jump because the Bible's true. You won't get a scratch. Look down at the place where you're standing. Now, this is what's interesting also, is when he's there on the pinnacle of the temple looking down, I often thought in my mind that there wasn't anybody around. But this is the capital city. This is the place where everybody came to worship. This is where everybody came to do business. And there were people walking from here to there, going from home to work and going to the different places where they would spend their lives. And so it was a very valid temptation for Jesus. I often read through these very quickly, not absorbing the fact that Jesus was actually facing temptation. He didn't just slough them off, but there was something significant that spoke to who Jesus was, and this is what that was. If he were to jump, he would have easily, immediately proven who he was. People would have seen that he was the one they've been waiting for. And so, although this was on the very front end of everything that he did, he hadn't yet done the things that we know he did. He hadn't yet said the things that we've heard him say. He hadn't yet lived through the cross, or died on the cross and rose again. He didn't do any of that yet. And he could have easily just stepped out and proven himself, without having to do all of the difficulty that he experienced in life. And the second thing is this. I believe there was a real temptation here because if he were to jump, would the Father have protected him? Now we know that the Father would have. But was the Father going to protect Jesus? And that's a very real temptation. And so as we look at this verse and we look at Psalm 91, we get a chance to see this idea that God does protect, and God does protect the Father, and Jesus wasn't surprised. I'm sorry, the Father protects Jesus, and Jesus wasn't surprised at what Satan was doing. And so he quotes a very obscure Bible verse. He quotes Deuteronomy chapter 6, and he says this, "Do not put the Lord your God to the test." Do not put the Lord your God to the test. But actually, what's the full passage there is this. Do not put the Lord your God to the test like you did at Massah or Meribah. And the word Massah means tempting. And so we should probably dive into that just so that we all understand what that means. And so back in the wilderness, when the Israelites had come out of Egypt, they were enslaved in Egypt and they were led out of Egypt. And through a turn of events, they ended up in the wilderness, a place very similar to where Jesus was now, a place where there wasn't really ready food and water available to them. Time and again, they had the opportunity to see God's hand of protection and provision for them, bringing them out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, providing the law, going out into the wilderness. And time and again, they had this opportunity to see God's hand of protection, and yet, again, at Meribah, at Massah, they're demanding that God provide water for them, even though the day before, God provided a miraculous food called manna and quail that they could just scoop up off the ground. And yet, they continued to lack trust that their Father would protect them. That God would protect them. I feel like that's all too often what we do. We say, God, are you really going to provide for me? Because it feels like I'm doing it alone right now. God, are you really going to protect me? Because I feel like you're absent. I feel like when I pray, there's nobody there. I feel like when I try to experience the spiritual disciplines that I'm encouraged to do, that I don't get the opportunity to experience you. You're not there. And we often get to this place, this desire of maybe testing God. Are you really there? We demand things of him, just like the Israelites did in the wilderness. So Jesus isn't being tempted to jump off of a cliff. I feel like if that was me standing on the cliff, that would be a pretty easy no, because I have a fear of heights, right? It's a pretty easy no to say, I'm not going to jump off that. But it's a lot less about jumping off of a cliff than it is about Jesus desiring, number one, to make himself known, to provide himself something of significance and protection, rather than seeking his Father and seeking God, who would provide and protect and provide his security for him. And I think it's interesting when we think about Jesus going out into the wilderness, because he's very weakened. So he's fasting. He's fasting for 40 days. I don't know how many of you have experienced a fast for whatever reason, but in the times that I've fasted, I often don't think about that time as being pumped up to go to battle. And yet here's Jesus in the wilderness for 40 days fasting, and then he goes to battle. He's at the weakest possible point. For me, when I want to get pumped up, I listen to Rocky music, right? I mean, so when I go running, I don't typically fast because I want to do well. I listen to the music that hypes me up. And so if you're getting out there on the field of play, whatever that looks like for you, the boardroom or the actual field, You're going to do whatever it takes to pump you up when you're getting ready to go to battle. And so Jesus is getting ready to go to battle with Satan, with the devil, because it says the Spirit led him out into the wilderness to be tempted. He had this idea that I'm going to be tempted. And he gets out there and he fasts. And so there's three things that struck me whenever I've done a fast, make a decision, a spiritual decision, something that was pivotal in our lives, in my wife and my life. I haven't fasted a lot, but in the times that I have, there's three things that always strike me about my fast. The first is this. The first is that whenever I feel hungry, I pray, which means that I'm praying a lot more than I am on a normal day. Anytime that my stomach says it's time for food, I pray. The second is this. The second thing is that I have this incredible desire to tell everybody around me that I'm fasting. Have you ever experienced that? There aren't a lot of rules about fasting, but there is one rule, and that rule, or there's not a lot, but one of those rules is this, that we are supposed to go about our day as if it was a normal day, because it's not about telling people or letting other people know how spiritual we are, but rather, it's about drawing closer to the Lord. I find that fascinating. And then the last thing that I'm interested in whenever I fast is this. And this is true of my life. So this may not be true of your life. This is a personal experience when I fasted, that whatever the decision was that I went to the Lord to fast about, I felt this overwhelming sense of peace about the decision that I went into the fast about. And so it could be argued that Jesus, although in his weakest physical state ever, is more prepared for battle with the devil than he ever would be by doing anything to hype himself up. He's in solitude and he's in silence. He's experiencing disciplines. His body is weak, and yet he is more prepared than ever to go to battle against the devil. And Jesus needed to be reminded that his protection and his provision from God was not through visible might or power, because it would have been to his great advantage to give in to every single one of these temptations, specifically this temptation to protect himself and to provide security for himself. And yet he chose to do what God wanted him to do. He chose what his Father desired for him to do. It reminds me of the story of King David. So King David, who wrote most of the Psalms, was the greatest king of Israel. Now, we know he had his flaws, but when he was anointed king, the actual king, King Saul, was very jealous about that and actually went out to kill David. And so he sent men, and Saul would go out and he would try to chase down David in the wilderness there and tried to kill David. And so David and his men were running and hiding, and there was this one cave that they were hiding in where Saul and his men also came in to that cave. But Saul and his men didn't know David was in the cave. So I don't know how this works, but there was a dark cave and David was in the back, and there's Saul, and they laid down to take a rest. And David could have easily overpowered Saul with the element of surprise. He could have killed Saul. And instead, he chose to go up to Saul and cut off a little bit of his robe, a little cloth. And he kept the cloth so that later he could show Saul, hey, I saw you and I had the opportunity. But what we learn in that story is that David feared what God wanted for him. He respected more what God desired for him than what he desired for himself, or the fear of his enemy that was there to destroy him. And so how does this fall on us? How does this temptation face us? I think it's a matter of doing what God desires for us,
clearly. But I think there's a few other things that really hit us so that we can take steps in our walk with God. The first is this. The first thing that I thought was Satan, the devil, does a fantastic job at getting us to believe that we are not followers of Christ. There is a specific temptation for us to believe that we have not been good enough or that we have not done enough. And so we look for things. We look for measurable growth in our walk with God. And I think for me, I kind of make these bargains, especially on the first of the year, when I go, well, next year I'm going to have journaled all of my devotions, and I'm going to have a vibrant prayer life, get up before anybody, and I'm going to have all these wonderful disciplines in my life, and I have aspirations that go way beyond reality. And yet, a year later, I look back and I say, I think I might be worse off than I was the year before. And we look for these measurable growth patterns. Or we look for things like, visible blessings or a particular feeling that confirms that I'm a follower of God. And certainly those come. But I think Satan does a fantastic job of getting us to believe that, yeah, we don't measure up. So there's no way we could be a follower of God. And yet, faith is believing based on what we find in his word, not based on anything measurable. The second is this, that we all like to provide protection for ourselves. And I think we are specifically poised in this culture to provide protection for ourselves. More than any time in history, we have what we need to be comfortable and to protect ourselves. And we like to think that we have the ability to do that. And there's not anything wrong with that, except for oftentimes, and the temptation would be that we would like to protect ourselves, and so therefore we don't need God. Why would we need God? We've got everything that we need. And so one of the challenges coming out of this message is this, that Jesus himself stood tempted to protect himself in a way that would have made him look amazing. And yet he said, that's not the desire that my Father has for me. And I think when we are tempted to protect ourselves at all cost, that we need to ask ourselves, God, is this the desire of your life for me? And then the last is this, the last thought that I had about how this hits us is that for Jesus, temptation was the very thing that prepared him for his life ahead. It was the first thing that he experienced in his public life after baptism, and it set him up for the ministry that he was about to do. And so it could easily be argued that the things that we face daily, regardless of who we are, the temptations that we go through, actually help us to be prepared for the life that we are living. And so very shortly before he went through these temptations, Jesus was baptized. And you may remember when Jesus was coming up out of the water from being baptized, God the Father looks down and says, this is my son in whom I am well pleased. He says, I see you and I love you and I'm proud of you. And I think for some of us, we go, I feel like God isn't really desiring the best for me. And I think that might be one of the reasons that we give in to this temptation to protect ourselves, because we think that we know what's best for us. And what you need to hear is that God is looking down and saying, I see you, and I love you, and I'm proud of you. Would you pray with me today? God, we are so grateful for the example that Jesus set for us. In many ways, God, your Son came to show us a different way, to show us a way that goes much contrary to our own desires. God, today I pray that you might move us as we see how your Son navigated and handled the temptations that came his way. And Father, when we are tempted in our lives, specifically as it relates to our security and our protection, Father, would you draw us to live out the desire and will that you've already laid out for us? Father, prepare us for what's ahead now. And through your Spirit, God, would you guide us as we experience this illustration of your Son's death on the cross for us through communion. In Jesus' name, amen.